woke in that rare, smooth, focused mood that told me I was either under attack or Raiden had spelled me into a healing slumber again. Given my fragmented memories, it was the latter. I sat up, glancing around in the dim light. The room was huge, with high, transomed ceilings of ornate dark tiles, the walls wainscoted black. To my right was an enormous fire in a hearth that filled half the wall, a black leather sofa and chairs, a dark coffee table, above which hung a single shimmering cut crystal chandelier, reflecting hundreds of tiny flames. I was alone, in a high-backed black velvet bed, tangled in black silk sheets. I could smell him on the sheets. Picture him too easily here. Naked, powerful, savage yet controlled, those cool silvery eyes glittering hot, blood red with beast. I knew how he fucked, like a man on fire. Uninhibited, raw, 100% focused. I'd watched him when I was far too young to have seen it, yet old enough to have shivered with awareness. Clutching a fistful of silk to my nose, I inhaled. It was a violent turn-on, slamming Lost painfully awake and alive. I'd never once gotten to have the kind of sex I wanted to have, the way I lived my life, at a headlong, all-out run, wild, unrestrained. Torture. I thrust the sheet away and began sorting through disjointed memories. Raiden finding me on the floor at Sanctuary, rolling me in a blanket, tossing me over his shoulder, carrying me. A brief flash of Chester's nightclub, then darkness. Raiden demanding I wake, drink a protein shake. Wake, drink more. Fighting with him, wanting only to sleep. A gloved hand behind my head. Liquid poured down my throat. Being threatened with a feeding tube again. No matter how far off the deep end I went, he always brought me back. Baylor. The memory slammed into my mind, laced with pure adrenaline, and I tensed. Holy soul-sucking fiends, I needed to talk to Raiden, to the Shidan. We had to find Baylor, but more importantly, we had to figure out how to kill him, since even my staggering power had proven ineffectual against the god. My first blast alone would have blown any fae to bits. Yet all I'd managed to do to the deadly, rapacious Baylor was wound his leg. Exhaling gustily, I scraped my long tangled hair from my face and blinked, staring down at my hands. Both were coal black. In one of my fists was a tangle of raven curls. In the other was a tangle of red. I shoved up one sleeve, then the next. Thorns on both arms. I surged from the bed and tried to decide which of the five doors led to the bathroom. I opened the nearest and blinked, staring. It looked familiar, but it was hard to tell with every piece of furniture shattered. Even the walls and floors had deep gashes slashed into them, as if massive lethal talons had been turned against them in fury. After a long moment, I recognized the bits of furniture, so similar to mine. It was the room Raiden had tattooed me in. That I'd thought was his private chamber, but was only the anteroom to the true private chamber within. Wait. What? I stood, processing the shambles. It was furnished exactly how it had been when he tattooed me. Holy mimicking monkeys, I'd aped his taste, not the other way around. And I hadn't even realized it. I was the copycat. My mood soured. I slammed that door and tried the next. A kitchen. He didn't have my exact counters, but they were damned close. I slammed that door and opened the third then, stood, hesitating on the threshold. I'd found the bathroom, and it sported an entire wall of mirrors. In anyone else's abode but Raiden's, those silver glasses would have made me uneasy. Yet abruptly, I wasn't in such a hurry to look at myself anymore. I had a damn good idea what I'd find. Shaking my head, bracing myself, I stalked to the mirror and gasped. I yanked up my shirt, unbuttoned the fly of my jeans, dropped them, and stared. Abruptly, so angry, I couldn't breathe. The only parts of me that weren't black was half my hair, half my face, and a fist-sized spot on my stomach. My left eye was full black. Deep within, fiery sparks glinted. I had a hunter eye. Bloody hell. I stood there a long moment, battling emotions so intense I didn't know what to do with them. I wanted to box them, knew I could. Simply pack it all up and get back out there in the world and see what happened next. Deal with whatever did. That was the way I lived. And how's that been working out for you so far? I muttered at my reflection sarcastically. Not so well. Raiden was right. Boxing the things that bothered me was long-term. Deadly. It was past time I faced things, and not just the state of my body. I tugged my jeans back up, dropped my shirt, then stared at my reflection, eyes meeting eyes, telling myself what I've always told myself. It is what it is. Find the silver lining. Throw that head back and belly up a laugh. It's just another adventure. Greet it. Master it. It didn't work. Because it wasn't this time. This adventure was stealing me away from my world. As surely and inevitably as Baylor had been wresting my soul from my body. My adventures were supposed to happen here. In my city. With my friends who were finally back. With Raiden. He was here. We wanted each other. We'd finally engaged in that long overdue dance of lust and, well, who knew what else? I was being yanked from the dance floor against my will. The thing I'd hated the most about being caged was being shut away from the world, cut off from it. I'd hungered for older and outside because, deep down, I'd had the same dreams as everyone else, only superhero-sized. I'd been raised by those dreams, unfolding on the television in front of my lonely, riveted, intensely impressionable gaze. One day, I too would have friends, a place to belong. I'd date, maybe even go to university, dance, fall in love like I did with Dancer, maybe fall in love again. That was how it worked on those shows. But my time was running out. Fast. I suddenly understood how Dancer must have felt, with his damaged heart, his loathing of clocks, his refusal to wear a watch, his abject rejection of the relentless march of time. But my heart wasn't damaged, and Raiden's was immortal, and I'd had every reason to believe we had plenty of time. One kiss, and 2 days later, boom, I was untouchable. If I were a character in a novel, I'd snipe the bitch who wrote my life this way. I fisted my hands, staring into the mirror, pressure building in my head, as I realized whether I turned solid black or actually turned into a hunter, the end result was the same. My life as I knew it was over. I would never kiss Raiden, never touch him. Never get to lose myself in passion on that big, beautiful body of his. Never get to test his sexual limits and mine. On him, I could vibrate at my highest intensity and never have to worry about blowing out his heart. So many desires I'd hidden, guarded in my heart, believing somehow one day I'd get to taste them all, when it was time. Not. 22 years. That was all I'd gotten. And holy hell, had they been crazy. Caged, lost, fractured, soon to not even be human at all. For whatever reason, in my mind. Me and Riordan had always been a foregone conclusion. Just as Dancer was mine, so was he. It was always only a matter of time. Or so I'd believed. Some women got a single great love in their lifetime. I'd gotten two at the same time, totally different, yet both mine. I'd known it even then. Dancer's failing heart had made my choice easier. I honestly don't know what I'd have done if he'd lived a long life. I've always been torn between the two of them. And although I'd worked hard to hide it, Dancer had seen it. Called me on it. Loved me anyway. That had taken enormous courage. To love someone you knew wanted someone else too, but had, for whatever reason, chosen you. I can't say that I'd be capable of it. I don't think my heart is that pure. Then Riordan had screwed everything up by leaving. I'd almost been done working through it. The whole grief-slash-guilt conundrum had swallowed me whole for a while. Riordan's abrupt departure had pushed me over the edge. Any boxes that were about to open, I'd slammed shut again. Somewhere in the suite, a door opened and closed. Footfalls. He was here. And the way I saw it, it was all his fault. Once, I'd have freeze-framed out there, slammed into him, vented my anger on his body. I didn't dare do that now. I turned and stalked back into the bedroom and nearly ran smack into him. We both backpedaled instantly. He looked like hell. Every muscle in his body was tight. His eyes narrowed to slits, glittering, and there was thunder in his blood. I could hear the sledgehammer of his heart a dozen paces away. His knuckles were scraped, his hands cut but already healing, no doubt from demolishing the anteroom.
"That was yesterday,"
he said tightly.
"Today I trashed the gym and my office."
"What the hell do you have to be angry about?" I demanded.
"Clarify your emotions, Denny,"
he snapped.
"It's not me you're upset with."
"Don't tell me who I'm upset with," I snapped back. "I know perfectly well who I'm upset with, the person that left me for 2 bloody years. We could have had 2 years, Riordan, but you blew it." He snarled.
"Don't you dare try to blame that on me. You bloody well know why I left. You won't let yourself think about it. The person you're angry with is you."
"Bullshit." I fisted my hands at my sides and locked my legs down to keep from lunging at him.
"For a woman who always seizes the moment, I'm the one moment you sure as fuck never seized. And I was right there for the seizing."
"No, you weren't. That's exactly my point. You left. You went off into the world and had adventures and sex and a life without me, and you wouldn't even be back now if I hadn't wished you back and Oz granted it, thinking the starving black beast would bite me in the ass somehow," I exploded in a heated rush.
"You wished me back? That's how I got here? Bloody hell. And you're just now telling me that? Barons and I wasted half a day trying to figure that out."
"And if I hadn't wished you back," I yelled, "you'd still be out there having a life while I was here by myself, trying to handle this whole bloody city alone, turning black and slipping away, and you wouldn't even know it. You know why? Because you don't care. You didn't text or call me even once. You don't fucking care about me at all." His head whipped back and he roared. Hands fisting, body straining, and he morphed so swiftly into the beast that his clothing exploded off him in pieces, shirt ripping down the back, sleeves and pants splitting, falling away as he transformed from a 6'4", 240-pound man to a 9-foot, nearly 500-pound beast. Then back to the man. Then the beast, then the man, beast, man. Sound of bones cracking, tendons grating, beast, man, beast again, faster. Back and forth he went at a dizzying speed, and I watched with horror, struck by the sudden fear that he might kill himself if he didn't stabilize his body fast. From the sheer stress his organs were undergoing in the rapid, incessant transformations. Not to mention his skin and bones. And no matter how angry I was with him for ruining our lives, I can never stand to see that man die. Raiden, breathe! Get a grip on yourself! I cried. But my words were gasoline on his fire, and the morphing sped up, and he began to bay, jaws wrenched wide. Then he was a man, roaring. Then a beast, howling such a terrible, desolate, fractured sound. And I couldn't think of anything else to say, so I shouted, Raiden, goddammit, I love you! Stop hurting yourself! Don't you dare die! I can't deal with that right now! Not only did I hate watching him die, I'd have to wait days, maybe even weeks for him to get back so we could finish this damned fight. And who knew if I'd even still be here? The beast jerked, stumbled, dropped to a knee, shuddering violently, then began to turn back into a man. Bit by bit, first his hands, then his arms, his shoulders, and finally, his face. I held my breath, refused to say anything, in case it pushed him back into that terrible morphing of forms again. For years I'd wanted to see the great Raiden lose control. I'd just learned a painful lesson. I never wanted to see it happen again. I'd kill anyone who ever tested his control, protect him, never let him break. This man was my, bloody hell, my hero, and I wanted him to always stay strong and whole. He knelt gasping for breath, chest heaving, tatters of clothing hanging on his trembling body. Then, chin tucked down, he glanced up at me from beneath his brows, eyes still crimson and ground out.
Never tell me I don't care. You can fling any other insult you want at me, but not that one. Never that one. Everything I've done for you. Everything.
He lunged to his feet and stalked toward me, naked but for odd bits of clothing here and there. I yanked my gaze to his face, in no mood to torment myself further. Don't touch me! I stepped hastily back. And put something on!
Don't tell me what to do,
he growled.
Suggesting works better at times like these.
You tell me what to do all the time, and it's...
You never listen.
Not like we'll be having future times like this, because...
We'll always be butting heads like this. You're too goddamn stubborn, and so am I.
Our time is up, Raiden. That's my point. And it's your fault! He snarled.
What did I say to you in the cemetery that night?
You told me you were leaving, I snarled back, and that I couldn't come. He stalked past me into the bathroom and came out with a towel wrapped around his waist, dusting part of a sleeve from his arm.
That's not what I mean, and you know it. The thing you boxed, the thing you never once looked at, the final words I said to you.
You told me to never come to you, I said hotly. He was getting too close, and he was right. I was angry with myself and had been for a long time.
After that. God damn it, Danny. What did I say right before I left? I know you heard it. I know how acute your hearing is.
I closed my eyes. He'd said,
until the day you're willing to stay. You had my number. If you'd called me, I'd have come, but you didn't.
You didn't call me either.
You wanted my brand. You wanted to know you could never get lost again. That mattered to you. I gave it to you.
What the hell does that have to do with anything?
For fuck's sake, because of that brand, I feel your emotions. I felt them that night in the cemetery. You may not have wanted me to leave, but it wasn't because you wanted me to stay. You wanted me to sit around, waiting endlessly, doing nothing. All for the slight chance Danny O'Malley decided she wanted to see me. I bloody well did that. I sat there 4 motherfucking months and you never came. Once. Came. I came to find you 12 times, but you couldn't get away from me fast enough. I know exactly what you felt that night in the cemetery. I felt every bit of it. Anger that I was leaving. Hurt. That I wouldn't tell you for how long, but more than anything, More intensely than all the rest, you felt relieved. You were bloody fucking relieved to see me go.
I fisted my hands so hard, my nails bit through the gloves into my icy flesh. What are you saying? That you went away to punish me? He snorted, then laughed, a bitter sound.
Never that. And I assure you, you weren't the one being punished. I waited 4 months, and what did you do?
He shot me a look so full of scathing fury, I flinched.
You grabbed the nearest man that looked like me and took him to bed.
I gasped. How'd you know he looked like you? He smiled, baring fangs, eyes flashing crimson.
I ate him.
My brows climbed my forehead. Before or after you came to the cemetery?
Does it fucking matter? Before. 3 minutes after you left him that night. And it wasn't because he almost raped you. The brand you wanted, the spell that kept you from ever being lost, is the mark of my beast. It binds me to you in countless excruciating ways. It mates my beast to you. Do you understand that? Let me spell it out for you. My beast abhors trespassers. My beast thinks you belong to it.
His next words came out accompanied by a savage rattle deep in his chest.
And bloody hell, so do I. Or I wouldn't have given it to you in the first place.
I stared at him. You put that mark on me when I was 14.
As a way to keep you alive and a promise to the woman you would one day become. It was my best shot at protecting you, keeping your fearless, impulsive ass safe. And if you'd wanted the brand as a woman, I'd have let you brand me with a reciprocal mark. If you'd chosen someone else, I'd have cut it off. But I would have kept you breathing until then.
I protested. But you didn't cut it off when I was with Dancer.
He was a short-timer,
he said savagely.
I thought I could survive it.
I flushed. Oh, God. You could feel me when I had sex with Dancer. That's how you knew I shouldn't vibrate on him. Could you see us?
It's not like that. And I wouldn't have if it were. I have no desire to watch you having sex with another man. I spent most of that time trying to block you two out, for fuck's sake. I felt your passion. I felt his. I felt your heat, your need, and it almost fucking killed me. I was ready. You weren't. I knew that. When you chose a man that looked like me, you couldn't have sent me a clearer message. Through you, I could feel Dancer's life force. He was growing weaker every day. Had he lived, had you stayed with him, I'd have removed it. I couldn't have stood it much longer anyway.
Yet you offered to make him like you, I said, stunned.
How the fuck do... Ah, the letter from Barons. It was from Dancer. That shit. He wasn't supposed to tell you.
You told me no. Why did you change your mind? He shrugged, muscles and tattoos rippling.
I had a moment of temporary insanity, Danny. Fuck, I don't know. I just wanted to end your pain. Maybe I knew he wouldn't accept. Don't paint it honorable. I'm not where you're concerned.
Yes, he was. No matter how he wanted to spin it. Because I loved Dancer, despite his own desires, he'd been willing to make him immortal for me. I wanted to thank him. I would thank him. But I wasn't done yet. He'd vanished, then showed up at my door, nearly starved to death, and I wanted to know where he'd been and what had happened to him. No more secrets. We would, at the very least, be friends by God. I wanted something with this man, and friendship demands truth. Besides, I couldn't stand thinking about him out there, never once calling or texting. That was bullshit. There was no excuse. Where did you go? Where were you for 2 years? I demanded.
Why were you so relieved to see me go?
He fired back.
There was one emotion I couldn't get to. You had it too tightly boxed. I've never been able to get into your high-security vaults.
That was good to know. I closed my eyes, steeling myself. If I wanted truth from him, I had to be willing to give it myself. But this was what had created the entire mess of my boxes to begin with. Boxes are like lies. They breed like rabbits and hop around out of control. Still, it wasn't as if there was anything left to lose. Inhaling deeply, I opened my eyes and said, "I'll tell you if you tell me."
"Agreed."
I was silent a long moment that spun out into a longer minute. Then two. We were about to do something we'd never done before. Rather than dazzling each other with our strengths, our finest qualities, here and now, in this strange final inning of a game we could no longer play, we were bearing our weakness, our faults. Something I'd never done with anyone. The world ferrets out your faults often enough. I see little point in lending a hand. I said slowly, wanting to bite back every word. "Because duration of grief seems as if it should be equivalent to the depth of love you felt for the person you lost." I paused a moment, struggling to get the next words out. "And I wanted to come to you shortly after Dancer died." I'd been ready long before he'd left, and I'd boxed it the moment I felt it. Who does that? Who moves on so quickly? I'd loved Dancer. He'd deserved better than that. He went motionless, staring into my eyes. Softly, he said,
"You crazy, beautiful, maddening woman. That's because you trained yourself to live that way. And wisely so. It's what kept you alive. It's been your saving grace. You learned young the necessity of leaving the pain behind and embracing the next good thing. Few people ever achieve that clarity. Prolonged grief is self-mutilation, a blade you turn on yourself. It doesn't bring them back and only keeps you trapped in misery. You were healing the way people should heal, but they punish themselves instead. For what? Being the one who lived? Those we love will die, and die, and die. Life goes on. You choose how, badly or well."
I knew that, with my head. But my heart had felt guilt so enormous and crushing, I hadn't known what to do with it. I'd been out of control from that moment on. Each time I'd passed Chester's, telling myself I was just checking on it, it was all I could do not to stalk in that door and pick up where our last kiss had left off. When he'd kissed me, like I was the many complicated things that I am, when he'd shown me how completely he understood me. I wanted to forget my pain, but anywhere I looked at it, it was the equivalent to forgetting Dancer. And I was the one who remembered the people who died, dammit. That was what I did. I noticed the invisible people. I knew what it felt like to be one. I used to think I'd die in my cage. And no one would ever even know I'd once been there. I'd simply vanish, unknown, unmourned, forgotten. Sometimes, toward the end, I'd wondered if she'd been trying to starve me to death. "I couldn't forgive myself," I said softly. "It was a betrayal of the love we'd shared. I refused to see you because I knew what I'd do and I couldn't resolve the conflict. But I would have," I added heatedly. "Within a few months at most. You could have texted me. Checked to see how I was, but you never did, not once," I said bitterly. "Your turn. Where did you go? And why were you starved when you got back?" He smiled faintly, mirthlessly.
"I never went anywhere, Danny. I never left at all. I was right here in Dublin the entire time, beneath your feet. Under the garage behind Baron's books and baubles."
"What?" I exploded.
"You walked above me once, feeling lost. I tried to send you a thought, but the pain was so intense by then, the hunger so consuming, I'm not certain it got through. It was either make barons imprison me in a spelled cage I couldn't escape, where he'd once contained his son, or cut my brand off you and risk you getting lost. I was never going to risk that. If you'd called me, barons would have released me. If you'd used IISS, it would have bypassed the spells holding me.
I stared. He'd been locked in a cage for 2 years? Barons' son? What the hell? I knew nothing about a son. I filed that away for future questions. Right now, all I could think about was Riordan trapped like an animal, as he'd once been so long ago as a child. As I'd been. We both knew the hell of cages. I would never go back into any kind of prison again. Couldn't imagine any reason to willingly commit myself to 2 years of isolation, locked up. Oh God, the whole time I'd been so angry that Riordan had left me alone. He'd been alone too, suffering. He'd been starved because he hadn't eaten for 2 years, shut away in the ground.
I turned into the beast shortly after Barons completed the final spell, and never changed back again. I knew it would happen when I went in. We can only go so long without eating. After that, it was madness. I lost all sense of time, marked moments by your most intense emotions. My beast raged every time you fucked. My beast wept every time you cried. With some small part of my brain, I kept thinking you'd call and it would end. I'd be free. We'd be free. Together.
The horror of it flooded my heart. All that time, waiting for me to call. But I never did. Why? I cried, incredulous. I don't understand. Shadows rushed in his silvery, crimson-flecked gaze.
I would have killed every man you slept with, Danny. I'd have left a trail of dead men behind you, guilty of nothing more than being chosen to share your bed. You'd have hated me for that, and I couldn't control it.
But you controlled it with Dancer, I said.
Locked beneath Chester's. I killed 3 of my men the final night you spent with him. That you loved him and were loved in return was enough to give me an edge over the beast. But lust, Danny, that my beast can't accept. I couldn't fight it. I couldn't win. I'm not human. Despite my appearance, despite my efforts, I'm beast first and it's not always controllable. That's what I was trying to tell you when I told you Lore wouldn't have stayed to watch you dance. We know our weaknesses. If we can't control them, we avoid them. We live by a rigid code. We didn't always. Barons developed and enforced it, and one by one we all adhered. You have always been my greatest weakness. You had every right to take men to bed. I had no right to stop it. I stopped myself the only way I could.
I stared at him and began to cry. Not ugly, just big silent tears slipping down my cheeks.
Christ, don't do that. Not when I can't. Ah, fuck. Close your eyes.
I did, because I couldn't stand looking at him, knowing I couldn't touch him. Couldn't bear the expression in his eyes, identical to my own. Then he was holding me, and my eyes flew open, but he hadn't moved.
There are benefits to the bond we share. Close your eyes, Stardust.
I did again, and his hands were in my hair and he was cradling my head, holding me to his chest. I could smell his skin, feel the unflinching strength of his body. I opened my eyes and the illusion vanished.
It only works if you keep your eyes closed.
Riordan, I'm so sorry, I said miserably. If I had known, if I'd had any idea this would happen. I trailed off. We'd both wasted 2 years. I'd wasted it. I'd never called, and I'd wanted to so many times. His silver gaze locked with mine.
You, Danny O'Malley, have always been the greatest mystery of my existence, the one thing I've never been able to predict. Linchpin theory means nothing where you're concerned. My actions may not have been the wisest either, but whatever's happening changes nothing. You're so bloody beautiful to me. Any color, any race, any skin, any species, woman, I will love you across all of them. If you turn into a hunter, my beast and yours will run together. We'll fight wars, save worlds, become legend.
He smiled faintly.
I'll be the only beast in the universe in love with a dragon.
His words took my breath away, slammed into me with a painful blend of joy and sorrow. In a moment, I would pull myself together.
As will I. That's what we do, you and I.
He said quietly. And in a moment, we would get down to determining how to save our world.
Precisely.
And maybe, in a million trillion gazillion moments, being a dragon loved by a beast would be enough for me. But at the current moment, I couldn't begin to envision that place and time. Once before, I'd waited too long and learned the true meaning of regret. I was choking on that bitter taste now. Raw, endless, grief, raining eternal tears. I closed my eyes against the burn of it and wondered if dragons could cry.
32. For a novel change, Gustain was happy to be small and inconspicuous. The great god Baylor was in a lethal mood today, killing the human bodies brought to him without even bothering to absorb their souls, a total waste of power, just so he could enjoy each moment of pain and torture he inflicted upon them before they died. Gustain had little respect for those who reacted with ego and emotion over long-term planning for survival. It was against his cockroachian nature. Survival was paramount. Patient, subtle, chess-like moves, plus yet more patience, guaranteed success. That was why he'd pledged fealty to the one called Riordan for as long as he had. Of his many alliances over time, it was that cool, calculating beast that had commanded his respect. Like the cockroach, the beast man would endure. The fairy prince was once a close second, but Cruz lied, and the lethal ice fire he'd charged Gustain with planting at the abbey had damaged many of his individual parts. A single mind controlled his hive of bodies, and Gustain counted each incremental part of himself precious. Felt the pain of them all. Hundreds of his bodies sported permanent scars from that battle, had been hobbled, crippled, like Baylor was now. Danny O'Malley had injured the great god, making Gustain wonder if he'd pledged his services hastily. The soul stealer was limping with a raw, jagged wound in his leg, charred at the edges. Eons past, Baylor had been one of the most powerful gods to walk the face of the earth, and a merciful one. The soul stealer had once alleviated the suffering of humans, walking battlefields, attending the lingering dying, removing their souls from their bodies to spare them the pain of slow death. But the fairy had come with stealth, abducted and tortured Baylor for a small eternity, trying to kill him, all the while impersonating him to his tribes. The fairy had destroyed half his face in their efforts to gouge that great killing eye from his body. But he'd slipped their clutches, even with his shattered leg, and returned to live up to every one of the horrific legends the fae had sown about him. Then been captured again by the fairy, and entombed in the earth. There was no god alive that despised humans and fairy more. For that reason alone, Gustain would remain in his service a bit longer. See if Baylor could turn his recent failure around. "Gustain!" Baylor roared. "Show yourself!" Hissing softly, Gustain assembled himself into a small head deep in the shadows. "My lord and master, How may I serve? Find her again. Dispatch your countless bodies and locate that bitch. I want to know the instant you spot her. Where she is, what she's doing, who's with her, where she's going. Get me concrete information this time, he snarled. He didn't point out that he'd gotten Baylor perfectly concrete information last time, but the god had overestimated himself and underestimated his prey. He loathed that he would have to leave enough of his bodies here with the destructive, raging god to remain in constant communication with him. Yet another master, yet more volatility. He'd give Baylor wide berth until he knew her location, stay compressed beneath rocks. Clearing his throat, he ground out, "How will you destroy her when she possesses such power?" Perhaps he should have allied with the woman. Anyone that could injure Baylor was a potential ally worth considering. Baylor gave him a terrible smile, sharp teeth, loathing and rage. "Why do you think I made my camp here, of all places? The benefits were countless. I already have something she cares about deeply, and when humans care, humans fall." He turned in a whirl of long black robes and snarled, "Oz, gather the other gods and get them here now. It's long past time we rain down hell on this world."
33. Do you want to touch me there? Where? Later, Raiden and I met with Kat and the Shidon in a bona fide conference room beneath Chester's that was decorated with the same sleek blend of muscle and elegance as the rest of his club. From snooping in his files while he was gone, I knew he had vast holdings, and imagined he held meetings here, preferring to keep his business private. I couldn't picture him walking into a bank or an attorney's office. Part of the nightclub was open again, as Illyrium was a pile of rubble, and I could feel the powerful bass thrumming beneath my boots. As I irritably tapped my fingers along to "Do You Want to Touch Me?" by Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. Clearly someone left Lore in charge of the music. Clearly someone needed to drag him out of the 80s before he drove the clientele away. Clearly they could pick a better song than one about people wanting to be touched. My only option right now was a Pillsbury Doughboy poke in the belly. When I'd called Kat earlier to fill her in on Baylor, she'd swiftly proposed coming into the city for a meeting, saying she had information for us as well. "It's possible," Kat was saying now. "This never would have happened, but the song enhanced whatever the hunter left inside you, Danny." "It's also possible," Ennio said. "Like the Fae, when one hunter dies, another must be born, the way Christian and Sean replaced the Unseelie princes." "It's also possible," Colleen said. "With hunters, if someone kills them, they automatically become the next one. Not only is all of that irrelevant, because it is what it is, it's also possible," I said dryly, "that I'll only turn solid black and never become anything else." I doubted that, but I was sick of talking about me. I was sick of thinking about me. "We called this meeting to discuss Baylor, not me," I reminded, scratching my arm through my glove. I was no longer icy to the touch, but I was having random sporadic bursts of itching beneath my skin, as if my cells were doing something I'd prefer they weren't. I was gloved, covered from head to toe, and bloody well hot. My hair was sleeked back into a braid, because I was afraid if I turned around fast, my long waves would fly out and kill someone. Holy crackling curls! My hair could kill someone! Everyone knew not to touch me. It wasn't as if they could forget I was dangerous when half my head was black. Obsidian flames licked across the left side of my face, streaking over my nose. With one solid black eye, dancing with low flames, I was downright fierce-looking. And beautiful. Just not who or what I wanted to be. Kat had filled us in on her time with Christian and Sean, and I'd mulled over the shocking realization that all of us, Mac, Varens, Riordan, me, Christian, Sean, had been off in our own corner of the world, trying to deal with our problems. They hadn't left me. In fact, none of them would have gone if they hadn't been forced to by their circumstances. Mac needed to learn to wield the Queen's power. Christian would have killed everyone if he'd come around. Barons would never leave Mac's side. And Riordan. Oh, God. Riordan had locked himself away to give me the freedom to take lovers, to figure myself out, to grow up. "Everything I've done for you," he'd said. "Saving me from the fire at the Abbey, tattooing me, offering to save Dancer, helping me rescue Shazam, forcing me to live when Dancer died, disappearing when I'd chosen a Riordan lookalike." I couldn't think about that now. We had a world to save. Thanks to Christian, we finally had a reliable timeline of the history of gods, fae, and man. When Kat had finished recapping, I'd taken my turn and filled them in on my battle with Baylor. The Shidon furiously thumbed through the books I'd swiped from BB&B while I talked. "Listen to this," Dekla said, reading aloud. "Baylor, king of Fomorians, often described as a giant with a large eye that wreaks destruction when opened. It's said as a child, Baylor stared into a cauldron of poison, or a spell of death being brewed by druids, and the fumes caused him to grow an enormous toxic eye. He was eventually killed by Lugh in the battle between the Fae and Fomorians for dominion of Ireland." "Here's another one," Duff said, reading from a different book. "The demonic one-eyed god of death, invader, conqueror, with a single enormous leg." "How does anyone even walk on one leg?" Ciara said with a snort. "He had two," I assured her. "I injured one of them." "And one huge eye." "He had two," I said again. "One was much smaller." "That he can use to kill merely by opening it and looking at someone." "That's how he was taking my soul. I made the mistake of locking gazes with him and couldn't break it. When we find him, you must never look at his eyes. He was wearing a mask, and when he took it off, it was instinctive for me to peer beneath it."
"Probably why he wears it," Arena said. "I'd have looked too. When people conceal something, it makes you want to see it more."
"I don't think that was it, or that's merely an added boon for him," I said. "His face was badly scarred beneath the mask, but the rest of it was attractive, beautiful even. I got the impression he's vain, egotistical."
"Perhaps he got scarred like that when he looked into the cauldron of poison," Duff suggested.
"If there even was a cauldron," Kat said dryly. "I researched Baylor myths as soon as Danny told me his name on the phone. They're all over the place, completely different stories. I found one that alleged he was a benevolent god that came when besieged to battlefields to attend the lingering dying, freeing their souls so they wouldn't have to suffer the pain of death. According to that myth, he was merciful. Gently removed them from their bodies and released them to the sky."
"Well, he's definitely not doing that now," I said grimly. "He's keeping them, absorbing them, using them for power and fuel. Factoring in what Christian told you, Kat, perhaps he was once a benign god, and what the Fae did to him turned him against us. Rather than using his gift for good, he uses it for himself."
Kat said, "The question is, how do we find him?"
"And how do we kill him?" Enyo said.
"The legends say by taking his eye," Dekla said.
"Those same legends say Baylor's dead," Kat pointed out. "Which seems to imply it didn't work."
"Not necessarily," Enyo said. "Danny said he's scarred around that eye. That sounds like someone tried but failed."
"The myths say
Loch used a slingshot to take Baylor's eye with a stone, Dekla said.
Yes, Cat countered. But supposedly, Loch was his grandson, and Loch was Fae. Our history is a mess.
There may be a simpler solution, I said, glancing at Riordan. Can you kill a god?
The Nine could kill Fae effortlessly. I'd once watched Jericho Barons suck the psychopathic Shisa Du from within the body of an unseelie princess and spit it out. I wasn't sure there was anything they couldn't kill. He shrugged.
I've never tried. What few remained after the Fae killed or imprisoned them, we cultivated alliances with.
Imprisoned? Criminy. I still couldn't get over the news that the gods had been imprisoned beneath Arlington Abbey all this time. When Cat had told us that, I'd instantly flashed back to the night in the cemetery years ago when hundreds of dark shade-like beings had risen from the earth, finally solving a chafing, unsolved case in my files. I'd been standing right there when the gods gained enough strength to escape their tombs, months after the song had been sung. I'd watched it happen, with no idea what they were. I narrowed my eyes. They hadn't cared for my hand that night. It's also possible I could kill him. I'd just need to get a direct hit to his eye next time.
No,
Riordan snarled. No, Cat snapped. No, Enyo spat. I blinked at them. Seriously, guys, look at me. I can't be touched anymore. Do you really think I'm going to sit on my hands, literally and figuratively, and do nothing to save our world so I don't get worse? How much worse can it get? I had a fair idea. The difference between human and not. But they didn't know that. Not for sure. Riordan locked gazes with me, growling so only I could hear.
Let others tackle the enemy this time. You've done more than your share.
He looked sharply away, but not before I caught.
Christ, woman. Just stay with me a while, will you? As long as you can.
It flayed me. I wanted to stay too. Time had always been the problem with us. I said, I'll be the last resort, okay? I promise not to do anything unless I absolutely must. Only if no one else can. That was the best I could offer. I know myself. If I can do something to save the world and no one else can, I'll pay the price. It's the way I'm wired. Everyone in the room nodded, looking enormously relieved. Inwardly, I beamed. They all wanted to keep me, as long as they could. Cat said, When he was trying to take your soul, did you pick up on any details about where he's made his base camp, Danny? Not a bloody thing. He could be anywhere. But his henchmen, Callum and Alfie, said he wanted them in Dublin for some reason, and wouldn't let them move to another location. I got the impression of tens of thousands of people, perhaps 100,000 or more, all gathered in the same place. It's not easy to hide an army of that size.
I've already got most of the Nine out searching,
Riordan said.
They'll scour every inch of the city tonight and range out beyond that by morning.
In the meantime, we'll continue searching, Cat said, pushing to her feet, and see if we can turn up anything else. Can you get in touch with Christian and Sean? I asked her. They could cover a lot more ground from the sky. So could I, if I were a hunter. Christian, yes. Sean, no, she said. I'll reach out to him. I said, Riordan and I will patrol, hunt the bastards abducting humans. If we can just find one of those mirrors, that will solve all of our problems.
We will not,
Riordan said tightly. Before I could even argue, Cat agreed. Danny, I didn't tell you this because I knew you had your hands full, but a dozen of our adepts went missing last Saturday. From what Christian said, it's a fair guess Baylor's holding them as Fae watchdogs. Two people, against the god you described, plus an army of countless humans controlled by him, won't be enough. Our sisters are there. I want all boots on the ground for this mission.
She's right,
Riordan growled.
We need a location. We go in force. All of the nine, all of the She-Seers, Christian and Sean.
He caught a dark look at Kat.
Fix whatever the fuck his problem is and get him functional.
She sighed. Easier said than done. I'm trying.
But if I kill Baylor, I argued, it's logical to conclude the humans will no longer be controlled. It could work.
You just made us a promise, Kat snapped.
You're the last resort, period.
What she said,
Raiden said icily.
But it could take too long that...
Danny, shut the fuck up, Enyo snapped. We're just trying to keep you alive, okay? Let us handle this.
Yes, it may take longer. We all know we're not as bloody superhero as you are, but we can do it. Think about it this way. We'll have to do it, if you're no longer here. And it sounds like you won't be here soon.
Her voice cracked and I stared at her dumbfounded, as the hardened warrior's eyes shimmered with sudden tears. She shook her head, wiping angrily at the moisture.
Good. For being so brilliant. You are so fucking dense sometimes. You still don't get it, do you? You bloody saved me when you found me. I was losing it. You roped me in and put me to work and gave me a cause worth fighting for. I don't want to lose you. None of us do.
She sprang to her feet and stalked from the room, unleashing a stream of curses as she went.
You always save everyone else, Kat said quietly. Let us save what we can of you this time.
I couldn't deal with this shit. I shoved my feet and stormed from the room. I paced Riordan's suite, practically gouging tufts of polished, glazed concrete from the floor with each step. They wanted me to do nothing. Sit idly by while they went to battle against Baylor. I had no idea how to live that way. And I saw little point. My future was inevitable. The only difference between me turning now or turning later was that I'd get to spend more time with the people I loved. But what if me sitting back and not fighting ended up costing the lives of those very people I wanted to spend that time with? I'd never be able to live with that. I felt like I was being torn in half. Part of me wanted desperately to hang on as long as I could and stay here with my friends. But there was another part of me that... Oh, hell, Danny, admit it, I muttered aloud. Part of me hungered for the power that was growing in me. There was so much good I could do with it. Turning into a hunter wouldn't have been my first choice for the way my life would go. In fact, it wouldn't have even been on my list of choices. But if it had to happen, well, at least I didn't end up turning into any of the many other weaker, disgusting things I'd killed. Hunters were lethal, their power astronomical, and I was pretty sure they were immortal. I could watch over my friends forever, protect them eternally, kill Faye, kill anything that messed with them. Then he was there, in the room with me, entering silently, stopping behind me. I shivered from raw, aching awareness of him as a powerful, brilliant, basely sexual in all the right ways man that had moved forever beyond my reach.
Love is the one thing you've never understood,
he said quietly.
Because you didn't have it. You don't need to save the world to make us love you, Danny. We already do.
I exploded into tears, crying ugly. How did he always know my secrets? That was exactly what I kept boxed in one of my highest security vaults. The Mega's greatest insecurity. I have to be Mega. I have to be a superhero to be loved. Hands fisting, he took two steps forward, then jerked to a stop. We both knew he couldn't touch me.
Christ, it fucking slays me when you cry,
he said roughly.
I growled through tears. I'll get it under control. Just give me a minute.
You always do,
he said flatly. I looked at him, startled by the undercurrent in his voice. Enormous respect. Enormous sorrow. Gargantuan frustration at not being able to touch me. I forced myself to breathe deep and even,
I'd figured out long ago that freedom wasn't just another word for nothing left to lose. Fearless was. I'd had nothing to lose. No ma'am, no home, no friends, no life. It's easy to be fearless in those circumstances. Now I had everything to lose, and a destructive, raging part of me wanted to go ahead and lose it right away. Get it over with, because limbo unravels me. Once you lose everything, you can take action. You either die or cope. But before, while you're watching it all go to hell, there's no action you can take. You're helpless, caught in a killing undertow. My mom was my entire world, and trapped in a cage, I was forced to watch her slip away bit by bit, unable to do anything to prevent it. I might have stolen food for us. With my super skills, I could have stolen money. We'd have been rich. I could have taken care of us. But I'd had to sit there, watching, while everything fell apart.
Close your eyes,
Riordan said softly. I didn't argue. Just let my lids flutter closed. Then he was there, standing next to me. I could see him, us, as clearly as if it was actually happening. I shivered with emotion, with desire. I could smell the scent of his skin, feel the omnipresent erotic current of his body as his powerful arms slipped around me. I dropped my head to his chest and melted into him like a second skin, savoring his strength, his heat, his big, hard body. This man was the one thing in my universe that made me feel safe. He rubbed his jaw against my hair, his hands spanning my back, and as he began to work at my tight muscles, my tears stopped, my body stilled, my breathing deepened. Even an illusion of him could take me down to ground zero. I wondered how he'd survived his childhood and come out so bloody strong.
Careful,
he said in my mind.
We're linked right now. You might see things you'd rather not.
You know my pain. Show me yours. I want to know.
It wasn't pretty.
As if my life has been. Exhaling gustily, he dropped his forehead to mine in our illusory embrace, raised his hands to my temples. We'd been standing in his office at Chester's years ago when he'd shown me that, like me, he'd been caged as a child, horribly abused, kept in a pit in the ground that was dark and damp and cold. Suddenly, I was there, trapped. The smell of damp soil and my own waste never let out.
Unless he hurt me so bad, he had to take me out for his doctors to heal me so he could do it again. It was the only time I saw the sun. I lived for the times he almost killed me. I began to pray for them. I wanted to see sunshine that badly, to feel it on my battered skin, to soak it into my broken bones, to walk up there with the others. Sunshine became synonymous with life.
He wasn't just giving me words in my head. He was somehow translating every nuance of a child's desperation, the hope, the hate, the pain. I was in that horrid, smelly, small pit, with that horrid steel door above me, fitted so tightly not 1 ounce of light trickled in. I was cold. I was lost. I was an animal. Everyone else got to live, but not me. I shuddered from the intensity of it. I was... Oh, like me, he'd gone into his brain. There'd been no place else to go. The boy had created lavish worlds in his head, lived in them, had replayed every detail of the wonderful, loving life he'd once had, milking it for what he needed to continue trying to survive.
Why doesn't she come for me? Why doesn't she save me?
An anguished scream, the crack of breaking bone. He'd not had the blessing of my TV, my infrequent mother, my glimpses beyond tightly drawn curtains when she'd walked out and slammed the door, gusting the drapes from the wall of the world beyond, of outside. Just endless, eternal darkness. No stimulation, incessant solitary confinement. How the bloody hell had he not gone mad?
I held on to my family in my mind. My mother was a beautiful woman, coveted far and wide. Barons was her first husband's son. When he died, two wealthy, powerful suitors vied for her hand. She chose my father and was quickly pregnant with me. I had an incredible childhood. My parents adored us. No harm touched me. If it had tried, my older brother would have beaten it senseless. But it was a lawless, barbaric time, and my father was killed in battle. Her other suitor came again, determined to possess her this time. She had never liked him, always feared him, called in friends to stand her ground with her, begging for time. He agreed to leave only if she permitted him to take her youngest son until she joined him. He said it was to foster me. We all knew I was his hostage.
I saw the man then, dark and savage, from long ago, and realized Raiden was translating things into words I could understand, because people had been so much more primitive then. Wealth didn't mean a fine home. It meant a vast tribe, furs and fire.
She never came for me because she died. Barons says she passed peacefully in her sleep of a broken heart. That losing both her husband and son was more than she could bear. I know better. A woman unprotected by a man back then was prey. I suspect those same friends that stood with her that day descended later and killed her, seizing our lands, and Barons barely escaped alive. He swore he would get me back, and he did. But that's a tale for another time, Danny. Our time may be short.
I drifted for a moment, linked to him, feeling him with all my senses. I'd never experienced intimacy like this before. So much more than our bodies touching, our minds mingling. I could taste the flavor of him. Danger, ruthlessness, savagery, fearlessness, and ferocious, unwavering commitment and loyalty. He was an animal first, pure, loyal, and territorial as a wolf. Family was everything to Raiden. He'd followed Barons around his entire existence, determined to stay together. The Nine had become his family too. He'd patiently reclaimed them each time they wandered off, moved them all over the globe for eons, following Barons as he searched for a way to free the son I hadn't known he'd had. He showed me Barons' son then, the cage in which he, and Raiden, had been imprisoned. He shared the final scene with me as well, the way the tormented child had finally been laid to rest. My eyes flew open in shock, shattering the illusion of our embrace, and I glared at him across the distance that separated us, which now seemed far too near for my comfort. I backpedaled hastily away. "Are you kidding me?" I cried. "I'm turning into the one thing that can kill you?" He shrugged, a faint smile playing at his lips.
"I always said I wanted an equal, Danny. Looks like I got one."
I stared at him in horror. "If my bare skin touches you and I blow you up, will you die permanently?" He shrugged again.
"I have no idea. I can, however, touch a hunter just fine."
He flashed me a wolfish grin.
"At least then I'll get to ride you, woman, in one sense of the bloody word."
"Don't joke at a time like this," I hissed. Silver ice glittered in his eyes.
"For fuck's sake, Danny, unbox your sense of humor. It's one of the many things I missed most about you. Speaking of which, any time now, you can start telling me what you missed most about me. From what I understand, if you turn into a hunter, you'll be immortal. That's a plus. I don't brood. That's Barons' gig, never yours and mine."
He had a point. There were worse fates. Shazam would probably like me even more as a hunter. Raiden and I could crack each other up for all eternity. A dragon, a beast, and a hellcat, carving out our own unique way of life together. Still, Any man would eventually tire of loving a dragon.
I'm not any man,
he said quietly, as he moved to a chest of drawers and withdrew a long wooden box.
What did I tell you so long ago? Adaptability is survivability. There are ways. I didn't want you out in the streets tonight because there's something else I want you to do. Come.
He turned and walked to a table near the fire, where he removed items from the box. Inks. Needles. A complicated design etched on a piece of parchment. As I joined him, maintaining a cautious distance between us, he said,
While I can create illusion in your mind that feels real, you can't do it for me unless we complete the brand. Then the illusion will be real for both of us. Specifically,
he went on, in case I was missing the point,
sex will be indistinguishable from reality. Fuck the uncertain future. Tattoo me, Danny. Let me be a beast in love with a dragon. We can still have it all.
I stood there, doing something utterly alien to me, thinking about everything that could go wrong. Love did that to you. Messed with your brain. Made you think about things you'd never think about otherwise. I shook my head hard, scattering those thoughts. I don't invite trouble. I invite the next grand adventure. And with Riordan, it was certain to be as incredible as it was unpredictable. And if we could create a convincing illusion of intimacy? It had felt exquisitely real to me with all my senses fiercely engaged. I'd known years ago that part of the reason I chose Dancer was because of how deeply Riordan rattled me. Dancer had been easy laughter and a normal future. Riordan was endless challenge and a future that was impossible to imagine. The future was here. I'd never had a normal life. Why would I expect a normal future? An unexpected exhilaration filled me. I wasn't losing him. We were just changing, becoming the next thing. We were good at that, he and I. It was our strength. It occurred to me that adaptability was more than survivability. It was the foundation of love. We were all changing, every day. And those relationships that endured were the ones that rode the waves together, grew and allowed each other to evolve, encouraged it, even when it was frightening. Adaptability in relationships was the polar opposite of a cage. It was necessary commitment wed to necessary freedom. He dropped backward in a chair and stripped off his shirt, his back rippling sleek and beautiful in the firelight, and said, in a low, sexy voice,
Come on, Stardust. Brand your man. I've been waiting a long fucking time for this.
Your man. I liked that. Holy hell did I like that. Riordan Killian St. James had just called himself my man.
Unless you're afraid to commit yourself to a beast like me.
He goaded. I snorted. Hardly. I'll brand your ass. He laughed.
Spine. It's more effective there. But finish it and you can do whatever you want with my ass. Just remember, turnabout's fair play.
I arched a brow. You might regret that. I was a lust-driven, uninhibited woman.
With you, no holds barred. Show me what you've got, babe.
He teased. I'd have teased back, but a sudden concern struck me. What about my blood? He'd had to mix ours to complete my tattoo. If my blood had changed, would it hurt him?
Not necessary. I tasted yours years ago.
Knowing the way his mind worked, he'd taken it just in case he needed it for one of his many linchpin theories.
Gloves are on the table by the bed,
he tossed over his shoulder. As I gloved up, I admired his wide shoulders, heavily muscled, tattooed back, tight, powerful ass and legs. He'd unbuttoned his pants, dropping them around his hips. God, he was so beautiful. At least in illusion, I was going to get to touch every inch of him soon. Let go of all that raging, caged passion I'd been holding back for so long. I couldn't wait to explore.